For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
God over your child's character. Before we actually break that down, I think it's really good and pretty hard to do when you're in the middle of things to really begin to sort out what's the end goal that you're looking for with your child. When you're in the day-to-day, it's just like you just got to get on to the next thing. You don't think about the long-term goal, right? And so what would be a successful adult in your mind? That's a really great question to ask periodically. The culture, I think, would have a very simple answer. It's like a successful adult is one who's happy, right? One who's happy. And what kind of goes into that happiness, they would say, is having a good education, having a good job, having a comfortable income. And hopefully we can critique that notion of A, success, and B, happiness, because of our understanding of what it says in God's word, right? I mean, Jesus had his own critique of this kind of approach to what is successful, right? You know, he says, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? And the answer is it gains him nothing. And so for us to be aiming at the target of happiness with these things kind of leading to that, that's not going to take us where we want to go. We can't control happiness, for starters. Happiness is a side effect of a life well lived. So, okay, so we don't want to go there. Then, you know, what should we be aiming for? What would we use to define a successful adult? And I think, thankfully for us, God has, like I said, he hasn't left us without a way. He's given us a pretty clear profile of what a successful adult is, starting with the notion that a real success is going to be that child, when they are an adult, they know Christ and they pursue his will for their life. We would have to say that's going to be the number one thing in terms of what makes for a successful life. And sort of subsequent to that, the key to being successful is going to be really spiritually mature. And luckily, again, for us, Paul tells us, gives us this profile of what spiritual maturity is. You can find that, right, in 1 Timothy and in Titus 1, where he actually lays out the character qualities of an elder and a deacon. And again, we're not saying the successful adult is someone who becomes a leader in their church, but what we're saying is these spiritual character qualities are going to provide a profile of what it looks like for a follower of Christ to be successful. So that's what we're going to look at this morning. We're going to look at like four or five of those. And think about those in terms of our children or the kids that we have in our lives. But before we do, there's a couple of things I think we should keep in mind. For those of you that are parents, is that God does want to use you as the primary influencer. Now, when your kids are small and they're literally imitating you, you know, that's not a hard thing to believe. But it gets more difficult as they move into the preteen and the teenage years where they're adamant to communicate to you that what you say and what you do has no influence over them whatsoever. I'm here to tell you that's not true. They're still watching. They're still paying attention. And even through those teenage years, yeah, there will be other influences in their lives. Hopefully some of those will be great influences. But you're still the primary influencer. You know, right? So this is a very famous scripture. Direct your children onto the right path. And when they're older, they will not leave it. It's both a privilege and a responsibility that God gives us as parents. Another thing that's important to keep in mind is as we think through these character qualities and how God wants us to influence is that we can influence character, but we can't change personality, right? So our kids come to us with certain predispositions, certain temperaments. And we can influence them, but we can't change who they are fundamentally. And so you are, you know, the most outgoing person in the world, and you have broken the world's record for play dates, and you know, your house is the center of activity on your block. And that's great. And hopefully through your example and through some of these other things we're going to talk about, your child is forming categories for those things that would be absent without your influence. But if that child happens to be an introvert, that child's always going to be an introvert. They're always going to be recharged by spending time alone, right? They're probably going to be most comfortable with a couple of close friends. You can't change that, but you can influence them at the same time. I think it's important to keep in mind. The other thing is you can call for behavior in advance of right motive, and this is real important when they're little. What do I mean by that? Well, as we're going to see, we're going to be, I'm going to be arguing that you should ask your kids to act in a certain way. And people be like, yeah, but wait, if I'm asking my kid to act in a certain way and their heart's not in it, aren't I just going to be creating a little hypocrite? And isn't that the very thing that Jesus was like incensed about with the Pharisees, that they followed the letter of the law, but their hearts were far away from it? Yes and no. Yes, Jesus went after the Pharisees in that way. But I would contend that's not what we're doing with our small children. With our small children, we're helping them practice. We're teaching them and we're helping them practice what God's way looks like. And when we don't, when there's an absence of that, they don't know, right? Now, if we shame them or reject them when they fail, which is what they will do, then of course, we're going to probably push them in the direction of becoming a hypocrite. But we can call for right behavior when they're small, you know, even with their when their hearts aren't there. Hopefully, you're teaching your small children to say thank you even when they're not feeling it, right? Now, we hope down the road they become truly grateful adults whose hearts are filled with gratitude. But in the meantime, you got to teach them this is God's way to live, right? So I just think those are sort of important to think about. All right, we're going to be influencers of these charges that God's given us. And how are we going to do it? We're going to influence them by praying. We're going to pray and pray and pray. And if you leave here this morning persuaded that there's one child that comes to mind and one issue in that child's life that you can pray about, and you pray about it, I don't know, maybe once a week or once a month, you have gotten your money's worth from this one-hour session, because prayer, more than anything, is going to change that child's life. So as influencers, we're going to pray. We're going to teach what this looks like. And again, I brought examples. These are not exhaustive, and hopefully there'll be time in the Q&A. Probably some of you guys are in the trenches and have great examples of what this can look like to teach at different levels with different types. We're going to teach. We're going to model this. And this is where the talk gets uncomfortable. And that's because here we're going to run up against our own failures and some of the difficulty that we're going to have with that. But that's okay, because hopefully we have a firm grasp on how gracious God is. And it's ultimately about His love and His acceptance, both for us and for our kids, that's most important. All right, let's look at one of these character qualities. A successful adult is above reproach, has a good reputation. The word above reproach means there's nothing to grab a hold of. And it's this idea that you take their life, a person's life, put it under a bright light, and there's nothing there to disqualify them. Billy Graham at his funeral, I think his son said that the Billy Graham you saw in his crusades was the exact same person that you saw at home. There was moral integrity there. And I think this is a broad category, but certainly to have a good reputation, it's going to include honesty, that type of integrity, and it's going to also have to include being hardworking and dependable. You can't have a reputation without that, right? A good reputation anyway. So we're going to need to pray that they become people with a good reputation. And what are they up against when it comes to this area? Well, a culture that doesn't value honesty, that's for darn sure, right? It's the ends justify the means. It's not like, do you have integrity? It's like, did you get away with it? That's what our culture is all about. So that's a big thing they're up against. They're also up against their natural inclination to not take responsibility for self. That's sort of built into our flesh nature or our sin nature. So they're up against a lot. And I think we need to keep in mind, we talk about these things, these character qualities, and what it makes to be a successful adult. You know, it's like God says, if you go my way, it's going to lead to life. And if you go the opposite direction, there's going to be real serious repercussions. It's going to lead to death, right, and destruction. So we really want to keep that in mind and pray about that. So just consider, again, the outcome of maybe some famous people known for their deceit. So you got this guy here, Pinocchio. Now, the outcome was for him, he did end up on Pleasure Island, which sounds way better than it was, because there he became a jackass and he became alienated from Jiminy Cricket. So it wasn't good. On a much more serious note, you have this guy, Bernie Madoff. It's actually a picture of him on his way to not Pleasure Island, but Butner Medium Correctional Institute, where he is going to spend out the rest of his life. And boy, did his lack of integrity and deceit, it just repped. I mean, I don't even think you can catalog how much destruction that followed in the wake of that. So this is a serious thing we want to pray about in terms of having a good reputation as being honest, right? Additionally, we want to pray that they become hard workers and dependable. What are they up against here? Wow, a culture that values entertainment and leisure and not hard work, right? Work is seen as a necessary evil that you got to kind of get around to get to what's really important and valuable, which is free time, you know, entertainment and leisure. That's the message that they're being bombarded with, right? And that's a pretty big thing to be up against. Nobody wants to end up like this, right? So this is, you know, your 30-year-old in your basement, right? Working at the pizza place for minimum wage. That's not an outcome we want for any of our kids. And you know what? I pulled this from an article, the title of which was, "It's going to cost you $10,000 to get your millennial out of your basement." It's a thing. If you Google it, I mean, people joke about it. It is a huge, big deal right now. So we don't want that. We want them to be responsible. We want them to be hardworking, and we need to pray to that end, right? Additionally, we're not just going to pray. We're going to teach. We're going to teach them how to have a good reputation. Well, what's that going to look like? It's going to include correcting lying and deceit for sure, right? It's going to look different with different kids at different ages. You know, your three-year-old that lies in an attempt to prank you, that's probably going to be way different than your middle schooler who's pulling stuff off the internet and calling it theirs as part of a paper that they're writing. You see what I'm saying? And so whether it's nuanced, but it's going to be really important that we take issue with this. And again, this is going to look different depending on your child's temperament, but it's a very important piece. Kind of connected to this, we want to remind them. And I think all throughout, you know, starting when they're small to when they leave us, what it is that God really values. Does he value our external performance and how good we look? No, the scripture's clear. What he values is the condition of our heart. And that's where honesty really is going to reside. And so in Psalm 51, it says, "Behold, you desire truth in the innermost being. You do not delight in sacrifice, otherwise I would give it. You are not pleased with burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise." This is what God's after. And again, helping them begin to forge categories for God's way, which is to confess, right, when we screw up. You know, pointing it out to them, gee, you seem to be very relieved ever since you owned the fact that you did, in fact, break that vase at your grandmother's house. You know, what is that? That's in keeping with God's way and the way God's designed us. So we're going to want to teach them what God values, and we're going to want to celebrate when they're honest. Again, really critical for different, you know, some temperaments are more inclined to be sneaky, have a greater difficulty with this. When that kid is honest, we really, really want to make a big deal out of it. We also want to teach them how to have a good reputation. Of course, this is going to include giving them age-appropriate work to do. So I remember when my sister's kids were small, I mean really small, she had them learn to do their laundry. And I secretly for once kept my mouth shut and was judging her. I'm like, that seems stupid. Why would you do blah, blah, blah? Now I realize that was really a smart thing to do. Thankfully, all my grown children do know how to do laundry by God's grace, but it wasn't because I taught them when they were little, and it's something they can learn. It's an easy thing to do. I mean, sure, you're going to have to put up with the moldy laundry that doesn't get moved over from the washer to the dryer, but that's a lesson we all learn, you know. But giving them age-appropriate work. So this is one book that I reference in this talk, Raising Men, Not Boys, by this guy, Mike Fabarez. And it's a really good book, not just for boys, by the way. I think his principles carry over largely to girls. One thing I liked was he says, at the earliest age, get them to start filling out forms. Whatever they can do, you should have them do. And I thought, that is genius. Why? Because the rest of their lives, everywhere they go, they're going to have to do that. And mom and dad aren't going to be there. So get them to start early to do that, because that's going to be part of what it looks like to be responsible. Have them get a job. I know that that's kind of fallen out of fashion. It used to be like a rite of passage when you turn 16 that you got your driver's license and you got a job. It's not so much anymore. Have them begin to work so they can make the connection between output, you know, receiving wages, being able to function in the world. It's really, really important. Point out the satisfaction of a job well done so they don't miss that. So the only thing on their radar is not, I got to get past this to get to what I really enjoy, which is playing my video game. No, it's like, dude, isn't it great? Aren't you enjoying this moment when you can walk through your room and not fall on stuff because you spend an hour cleaning your room? You see what I'm saying? Point that out so that they get that there's a connection between, you know, a job well done and having enjoyment in life. And when it comes to modeling what it looks like to have a good reputation, I think it's, again, it's going to start with us when we fail, and we will, but especially when we fail when it comes to something directly connected to them. We need to own it. We need to possibly even ask for forgiveness. And then I think it could be an opportunity for us to, you know, explain how much we appreciate God's grace and how, yep, I did mess up here, but I'm so glad that God knew about that. God loves me, and God's going to give me what I need to move forward from here. But we need to own it. And I think, you know, for some of us, this is more of an issue than others. We need to demonstrate our own enjoyment of work. God, you know, God works. He gave us work before the fall. It's something that we were meant to enjoy. And so, again, I think being able to model that for our kids can go a long way. All right, so we want them to have a good reputation. This is kind of interesting. According to the profile in Timothy and Titus, a successful adult is hospitable. Now, if you're like me, you know, you think about, like, I don't know, you just, when you think, hear that word hospitable, you think about like a career domestic, right? Something that sort of comes to mind, and you automatically then disqualify yourself from having to do this because nobody's like this, right? I would be like this if I had an assistant in my kitchen with me all the time, right? Doing the dishes, that'd be awesome. Getting the groceries. That's not what being hospitable means. Being hospitable means that we're welcoming to the stranger. God says this is what we're supposed to be, right? And the successful adult has this as part of their character. We need to pray about this. Why? Why do we need to pray about this? Well, what are they up against? Well, how about what comes naturally to them, like it does for us, is loving people who are like them, right? That's easy to do. And Jesus had those, you know, kind of words of rebuke. He says, even the most reprobate people do this. Tax collectors love those who are like them. He says, you need to be different. You need to be able to go outside your comfort zone and love people who are different than you. In addition to this, the culture is increasingly alienated. It does not foster, it does not value personal relating. I know you're aware of this, but are you aware that there's a medical thing out there now called the loneliness epidemic? It is considered a threat to people's health and well-being. And they put loneliness, medical professionals put loneliness on par with threats to your health like obesity, something like smoking 15 cigarettes a day is supposed to be that detrimental. In 2017, England appointed a minister of loneliness to address this very problem because people are really messed up because they're so disconnected from other people. Ironic in the world we're living in, where I can connect with anyone, anywhere, you know, whenever I want. Well, again, I think it's obvious that being made in God's image means that we're created to have personal relationships that go beyond reading words on a screen or seeing images, right? We're made for this face-to-face connection. So we need to pray about this because the culture is increasingly moving away from this and doesn't know how to do this. And it's only going to get worse. So we need to pray that our kids are going to be different this way. So we need to teach them how to be hospitable. You know, starting at the basic level, what it looks like to engage, how to take interest in others. I was having coffee with a girl, a 20-something-year-old, a couple months ago, who I'd never met. It was our first time together. And halfway through the conversation, she asked me a question about myself, and I thought my jaw was going to hit the table. I'm serious. I was like, wait, did you just ask me a question about me? I didn't say that really, but I was astounded. Why? Because I'm regularly in conversations with adults that never take the time to engage the other person. They're so bent on constantly just talking about themselves. It's a basic thing, but we can teach them. We can help them form categories for that. Having eye contact, speaking clearly, again, asking questions. I think even when kids are small, we can get them to discuss what they can do to make others feel comfortable in your home. They're having a play date before they show up. What does that friend like to do? Well, they like dinosaurs. Okay, well, you have that one Lego dinosaur set. Let's pull that out, whatever. But again, helping them anticipate this and make plans to make someone else comfortable. What are we teaching them? You know, to apply what Jesus said, treat others the same way you want them to treat you. I was talking to somebody who has older kids and teenagers, and she said, you know, we just made it a hard and fast rule when they were having their friends over, which we embraced. We just made them spend time cleaning the house. And their attitude was always, why should we? They're teenagers. They don't care. And their attitude was, look, that might be the case and it might not be the case. But the one thing we want to do is we want to take any barriers out of the way that could somehow get between them and experience God's love for them. And so we're just going to make sure the house is picked up and clean, and we're going to make sure there's food so they can feel as comfortable as possible. And I thought that was something pretty wise. So we're going to teach them this, and we're going to model it, right? We're going to open our house to others. We're going to make it a point to host our kids' friends. And again, for some of us, this is like a no-brainer. You know, we're the people that invite the cashier at the grocery store to Thanksgiving dinner, right, Susan? You know, no trouble at all meeting strangers. No trouble. But others of us, this is a pretty daunting thing to think about. And that's okay. You know, I think we can just set a goal to grow in this area, whatever that looks like, opening your house in some way, in some form, on a monthly basis, whatever. Ask the Lord to show you how to set a goal here. I think it's interesting, though, it's not just the elders and the deacons that are called to be hospitable. All believers are called to be hospitable. We'll see that verse in a minute. We also want to have our kids help before and after cleaning up without complaint. This is where the modeling gets hard, right? That means we're not complaining, and we're going to encourage them not to complain as well. But here's this verse in 1 Peter, given to all believers. He says, be hospitable to one another without complaint. So we're all called to do this, right? And to do it without complaint. So we want them to be people with a good reputation, with honesty, and to be dependable, hardworking. We want them to be hospitable. We also want them, we know that to be a successful adult, it's going to mean that they don't love money. The Bible's very clear about this. that money does not rule their life and that they are generous. Are they up against much when it comes to this? I'd say so. They're up against a lot, right? What comes naturally is to live for self, and the culture promotes this as dogma. I don't know about you, but where I work now, that one of the catchphrases people use is self-care. And it's, you know, and it sounds good, you know, and on one level it makes sense. We need to take care of ourselves, and, you know, we need to make sure we have some downtime and time to kind of rejuvenate and all that. But honestly, whenever I hear it, it's being used as an excuse to just indulge yourself. So the red flag always goes up when I hear it. But that's the world we're living in. Living for self, and anything short of that, we'd be challenged to be, we'd be like, you know, on the verge of being hurting ourselves, you know, emotionally and mentally. Also, right, we live in a culture that teaches that money is absolutely the key to a good life. Our kids, just like us, are being led to believe that money is going to equal security, status, and freedom. And look, I hope you appreciate how believable those lies can be, that our children are being inundated and we're being inundated with. Do you guys ever get fooled? I do. I've been walking with the Lord for over 40 years. I saw a commercial on TV last night where this guy had these Bluetooth speakers on, and he was having so much fun. He just seemed so invigorated, and I don't have any. And I thought, man, I need to get some Bluetooth speakers. I'd have a little bit of what that guy has. True or false? It is false. And our kids are being inundated, right? So I was thinking, you know, one of my grandkids is about to have a birthday, and he's turning 10, and it's like that's the age where you're starting to really pay attention to how you look. And I was thinking, you know, I should get him something, you know. He doesn't have a lot of clothes. And I was like, you know, I should get him a jacket. This is a pretty cool jacket, right? And if you think this kid is cute, I'm not even exaggerating. You should see my grandson. This thing makes this kid look, I don't know what. My grandson would rock this jacket. And I know that none of his friends have this jacket. And this is not just any jacket. You're thinking it's faux leather. It's not. It's actually a Saks Fifth Avenue leather jacket. Now, who wants to take a guess how much this jacket costs? And just in case you're wanting to know, we have a Saks Fifth Avenue here. Just happened to notice at Polaris. $85. Not even in the ballpark. Way more. And if you know how much it costs, I am going to judge you. So if you know it, you better keep it to yourself. Ready for this? More than we have spent on most of the cars we have ever owned. And I think this kid has like the, in that right hand, I think he's probably got the iPhone, you know, 10R. He's got the, you know, boys, super sound sport, you know, wireless speaker, whatever. Yeah, it's ridiculous. My point is, though, this is ridiculous. We're able to laugh at it. But the messages that they're getting on a regular basis, I'm just telling you that it is a tidal wave, and we need to pray that they can lean against that, right? We need to teach them about loving money. It will not produce security, status, and freedom. What did Jesus say to that guy, or about the guy who built the barns to hold more of his stuff? What did he call him? You fool. You fool. Tonight, he says, your soul is going to be required of you. You fool. So we need to teach them this. And in connection with that, we need to teach them to debunk or to grab a hold of the message behind the message, right? So really, that ad for that jacket, it's communicating. If I could buy that, they will get status. They'll be somebody. We need to get our kids to begin to think, is that true? Is that kid going to be somebody? Is he going to be more, you know, than somebody that doesn't even have a jacket? We need to get them to begin to be critical thinkers this way. We need to teach them to be grateful when they're small. But I think, you know, coming up with your own little rituals for playing over at the end of the day, you know, how they've seen God's goodness and God's kindness to them. I think that that's important. And I think these are discussions to continue to have, obviously, in a different way as they move on, right, into their older years. Because, you know, most of us are inclined to think about what we don't have. We need to really become people who are grateful for what God has given us. And teach them about God's, the world and God's heart for the poor. There's a million ways to do this. But so important for them to know. We live in this bubble where there can even be an ad for a jacket like that. Where most of the world doesn't, people don't even live on that much money in a given year. We need to teach them about that and how much this matters to God. He pled the cause of the afflicted and the needy, then it was well. Is that not what it means to know me, declares the Lord? Why does this matter? Because this is, God cares about the needy and the afflicted. They need to know that. And have them give, however you work that out, and begin to teach them the joy of being generous. The God that we're made in the image of delights in giving, and so when we operate that way, we will experience joy. You got to be careful as they get older that you don't push this or force it. We did this with one of our kids when they were a little too old, where we forced them to have a birthday party where no gifts were allowed and everyone could give a donation to the school in our, the inner city that we're involved with. And, you know, I don't even want to tell you how old this person is in my family, but they still bring it up to this day how that was wrong. We can laugh about it, but you got to be careful you don't push this issue as they get older. We want them to own these things more and more, but when they're young, yeah, it's on us, I think, to push them. I love this verse in 1 Timothy where Paul's talking about how to handle people who are rich. He says, instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. God's life comes from giving, right? We want them to learn that. We want to model not loving money ourselves. You know, and that can take a lot of forms. I think including them in family discussions about giving, explaining to them, or at least being in on why we prioritize what we prioritize. As they get older and they're like, why don't we live in a nicer neighborhood? Why don't we have a better house? My friends do. How come? Explain what our attitude is toward work, about career, the priorities with our time and money. That's going to be an important discussion. And I think when God lays it on your heart to spontaneously give, share it with them, not in a braggity way. And with some kids, you're going to probably have to caution them to not go around, you know, talking about it as well. But just so they can begin to have their own category for seeing a need and having the Holy Spirit move them in that direction and giving some of what God's given them to relieve a need. A fire down the street. Hey, here's what, you know, here's what we're going to do as a family. There, you know, there's a tsunami in Indonesia. Here's what we're going to do. I think that that can be helpful as well. And just like for them, express joy when we're able to give, because that joy should be there. All right. Good reputation, right? not loving money. Hospitable. And now, the successful adult can say no to self. Is this a big deal? Wow. They're not addicted to wine. They're not self-willed. They're not quick-tempered. This is a huge part of what it means to be a successful adult. And we need to pray that they would become self-controlled. What are they up against? Again, what comes naturally is living to satisfy whatever urge comes their way. I want what I want when I want it. And it's like we live in a culture that promotes satisfying urges, and it makes doing that increasingly easy, right? So we've got to pray about this. You know, we just know that if they go the other direction here, the outcome can be really disastrous. Sad to say, I know adults that operate a lot this way, right? When they want what they want and they don't get it. They don't play well with others. You know, this is a huge issue. To be able to say no to yourself is just going to be critical. So we really need to pray about it. We need to teach them to be self-controlled. That means saying no when they need to hear it. Right? No, you can't have the dessert if you didn't eat the meal. No, you can't drive the car if you didn't come up with the money for the insurance. They need to hear it, even if they make us pay. Instruct them about short-term versus long-term outcomes, the positives of delayed gratification. They don't know that naturally, so we need to instruct them. Okay, you've got those $3. You have that super soaker that you're determined to buy. That's great. Now you're in the grocery store, and you've decided you can't wait, and you're going to go for the claw thing that never grabs the, right? So then we teach them, you know, now that $3 is gone, you have to start all over. That's going to delay you getting what you want. Conversely, when they make a choice in that direction, we say, great, you did decide to stay home and study for that exam rather than go hang out with your friends. And wow, you passed the class and you're going to graduate. Isn't that great, right? We need to teach them this because it doesn't come naturally. What comes naturally is wanting what they want when they want it. And we need to let them fail. Experience the consequences of failure so they have categories for it. What's the opposite of that? Where we intervene and protect them from failing. That's not how life's going to work, and it's going to end up really short-circuiting so much. One of our kids got fired from a job, and when they were young, right, still living in our home, and it was a situation where we could definitely have intervened and pushed the situation to prevent it from happening. And we didn't. And it was embarrassing when the boss came to our house and told him that we've lost his job, right? But I think that was a lesson that he learned that permanently had an impact on him. We want our kids to fail while they're still in our houses because it teaches them so much. We don't want to intervene and prevent that. We want to model self-control, and this is where this gets difficult, especially for some of us. You know, some of us know we have issues with our temper. We don't want to pretend that's not an issue. We want to allow God to have his way with that. And we want to get help. We want to move and work on this issue. We also want to enjoy the things that God's given us to enjoy, but not allow them to master us. That's what we're told to do, right? And that's what Paul reminds the Corinthians of. They're all about the enjoyment, but they let stuff get out of balance. He says, all things are lawful for me, but not all things are profitable. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be mastered by anything. I don't know about you, but I still struggle with issues in this department. I let things get out of balance in my life. And I have a choice then to pretend it isn't happening, or I can face it, go to God, be honest with my friends, own up to it, and allow God to move me forward. Where there's a struggle with this, we need to be real and share it with someone close. All right, the last area. A successful adult has their sexual life in order. The husband, they're the husband of one wife. What does this mean? They follow God's design for sexuality. Right, so you can see how those other character qualities, how they could feed into this, especially being able to say no to yourself, has a lot to do with being able to keep this area under God's will. Right? Do we need to pray about this? What do you guys think? Right? What are they up against? The world has utterly lost its way here. I don't need to belabor that. If you do Google it, though, and you look this up. So right now, there's been research, and over the last few years, there's been a decline in sexual activity with young people. I'm not sure how the research is conducted, but it's... No, seriously, it's like well accepted. The good news, there's probably more than just this, but one good thing is that the teen birth rate is at its lowest point it's ever been, right? It peaked in the 50s. But I think you ask yourself, okay, well, why is it down in general? And they don't have it obviously nailed down, but I think it has to do with this next bullet point. Sex is primarily about serving self. I'll let you fill in the details there. People don't even need other people to take care of this area of their lives anymore. I mean, they're up against a lot, and so we need to pray, right? Pray that they become people with a godly sex life. It's probably not hard at all to think of how easily and how quickly people run their lives up on rocks when it comes to not going God's way in this area. I put this PowerPoint together a week ago. And in a week's time, we have a whole new face of what it looks like to destroy your life this way, right? But, you know, in case you're not thinking of anybody, how about, you know, the America's Father figure from the 90s? Not anymore. How about this guy, Mr. Movie Mogul? Nah, not anymore. Lives destroyed over this area. Not just their lives either. So, we want to teach them God's design for sex. We want to talk about sex. And we want to cast a godly vision. The picture from the scriptures and God's design is so good, and we want our kids to know that. The man said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife. They shall become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked, and they were not ashamed." Right? This is God's design, and we want to keep that in the forefront of our kids' minds. Our kids are up against a lot. This is one thing I really appreciate about the section in this book on sex. Is he doesn't pretend like they're not up against a lot, but he's like, it's not impossible. It's not impossible, even in the culture that we're living in today, for kids to make it all the way through and have this area intact. And I don't know. I just think that's a great reminder. This is God's design. This is good. This is what we need to remind our kids of time and time again. We need to seize the moments, large and small, to talk about these things, right? You know, have the talk with your preteen. And every year, I'm told, it gets pushed back where that talk needs to happen sooner and sooner. Because if they're not hearing it from you, they're going to hear it from someone else. Without a doubt. And you want to be the person that has the most information and they have the most access to when it comes to this. So you want to seize those moments, large and small. I was talking to somebody who's had two teenage sons and they had the talk, right? But then while they were going through high school and middle school, the dad would take the two sons away once every fall for a dad-son time. And what he would be intentional, do a lot of fun stuff, but to talk about sex with his sons. And he'd pay attention throughout the year, what they were saying to each other, kind of where their minds were, so that he, you know, he'd show up there ready to talk about this. I thought that was genius. You know, and you want to take advantage of those small times too, where they're seeing images, where you're walking in the mall, you know, past the lingerie store or whatever. And they're noticing it. You know, don't pretend they're not noticing. I like what this guy says. He says, a brief commentary from mom or dad that affirms the good of sex in its proper context, along with a warning of the harm of sex out of its context, is always better than trying to ignore the unignorable. He says elsewhere, you know, it's like explaining, yeah, that seems weird, what you see going on in that movie between the kissing or whatever. But that's actually a really good thing that God has given for married people to enjoy. Sadly, a lot of people think that you can do that with anyone at any time. And it ends up being something that hurts people instead of making people healthier and loving, more loving. I thought that was helpful. So teach them God's design for sex. Get educated. And again, I didn't have time with this teaching to vet all the information that's out there. And I know there's a lot of really good stuff out there. Ask your friends. Maybe ask your friends who are a little bit ahead of you on this. Here at our church, my friend and colleague Bev DeLashmit actually has a class on this, Raising Sexually Healthy Children. It's got really good material. Even if you just get the PowerPoint, read through it, which is what I did. It's got great information there, including a book list. You're going to want to model enjoyment of your spouse and your marriage. You want to protect and invest your marriage. Invest in your marriage. So by protect, I have in mind here when it comes to pornography in your own home. You want to, at a minimum, put safeguards in place. That's a whole nother topic. But you want to protect your marriage across the board when it comes to this area. And you want to allow God to restore you in this area. You know, I've been around the block long enough to know Christians, all of us, you know, I haven't met anybody that has come into their walk with Christ that either hasn't had baggage from their past or ongoing struggles in this issue, even as they follow Christ. So that's okay. But my point is, be real about that and allow God to begin the process to restore you in this area because it's so important. Okay, so we had a good reputation, being hospitable, right? Being able to say no to self, and having their sexual life in order. I think I forgot one. Here's the thing, though. God does want us to influence our kids, but what about when we fail? Not if, but when we fail. We have options. We could pretend it never happened. Not a good option, because your kids are going to see it, and that's just going to confuse them in so many ways. We give up. Just be like, this is an area of struggle for me. I screwed up again. I'm just going to give up. Not a good option either, because God still wants you to be a critical person in your child's life, even in this area that you find difficult. How about this as another option? See it as an opportunity to experience grace in a new way. Be honest about this. Confess it to whoever needs to hear it, but especially between you and God. Ask Him to help you. Ask other people to help you. And when you fail, here's the thing you need to remember, that God will be gracious. He will continue to work on your character, right? And He will keep loving and providing for your children. What about that verse in Romans 8 where Paul's like, look, if God was willing to give His own Son up for us, how will He not, along with Him, freely give us all things? He promises to do that. And I just got to say, reflecting on this, I had a lot of opportunity to reflect on my failures as a parent, which was extremely painful and humbling. B, I'm super grateful once again that God has given me a community to raise my kids in. And I'm just awestruck again by how, reflecting on a lot of this stuff, how I've seen God for my kids fill in those gaps. You know, where we were too rigid, where God put people that were believers in their lives that could demonstrate what it looks like to follow Christ and not be rigid, thankfully. You know, where we were dropping the ball in some significant areas spiritually, where these people came in and were teaching our kids and engaging with them where we weren't. If you're not in community, get in community. And when community gets hard, push past it. Not just for yourself, but for your kids, because so much of the grace that God wants to give them, so much of your kids' character development is going to come through community.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.